Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show, a production of Aim for Truth and Americans for Innovation and the Miners, led by Mike. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon. How are you and Tyler doing?
Good. Thank you for coming up from the mines for the 4th of July and bringing with you the gold. And the gold in this case is a bunch of false flag philanthropy. And that's not easy to say.
That's very good. Yeah, this one popped out of nowhere. If you recall, we were pointed to by a listener a set of hearings that occurred in the early 50s that studied the potential subversive activity of large foundations, and specifically they were focused on the Rockefeller Foundation, Carnegie Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And there were others, but those were the three big ones that they dealt with. And we were, there's like, I don't know, 3,000 pages of a congressional record to go through. And by the way, those were hard to find. They weren't easily available. They were broken up into parts. And so therefore, it made searching very difficult. So that has been remedied now by the researchers. And we were going through the conclusions of the committee. It was called the Reese Committee, and they had two versions of the committee. One was the Cox Committee. That pretty much whitewashed everything with the foundations. And then Reese said, wait a second. So he had another year and a half, and he had the stroke to do it because he had been the chairman of the Republican National Committee. So they went through and they studied the foundation's activities in detail and were given unprecedented access to their documents, even the founding documents of the Carnegie Foundation. And in the conclusion, after they announced that they were going to close the committee, the Rockefeller Foundation wrote a letter to the committee and said they wanted to be able to edit anything that was written about the Rockefeller Foundation before it was shown to the public, which Representative Reese pushed back on and didn't allow. But the person who wrote that letter was Dean Rusk. And that rang some bells for me because that name was familiar. And I had forgotten his positions, but by way of a quick summary, he was the Secretary of State under John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson. So from 61 to 69, he was the Secretary of State. And prior to that, he held other positions from 1947 on within the State Department. In 47, he was the Director of Special Political Affairs. In 49, he was the first Assistant Secretary of State for International Organizational Affairs. And then in 1551, he was the second Assistant Secretary for Far Eastern Affairs, i.e. Vietnam and Korea. And then in 61-69, he was Secretary of State. So this guy led a magnificently blessed life of political power from the moment he left Oxford. Then we went and looked at his time at Oxford, and we discover he was a Rhodes Scholar. And he actually won something called the Cecil Peace Prize, And I was not familiar with that prize. I assumed it had to do with Cecil Rhodes, but that was incorrect. It had to do with Lord Robert Cecil. And Lord Robert Cecil was a globalist who was a co-founder of the Pilgrim Society back in 1902. He was a delegate to the First Imperial Press Conference in 1909. He was a co-founder of the Empire Press Union, which today, by the way, is the CMP Trust. And he was a co-founder of MI6, MI5, and what is now GCHQ. So this guy was a flaming Pilgrim Society globalist. And during the time at Oxford, Dean Rusk was given an award, the Peace Prize Award. Well, that is ironic, because if you look now back at his career, from the very moment he came into starting to work under Truman, He began to be involved in the affairs of Korea, the Korean War, the Vietnam War. He was there for the Bay of Pigs debacle, which was the CIA's failed attempt to take Cuba. And then he led us right into the Vietnam War, which when I was in university, I actually had a 2S deferment and had a draft number of 14, and I was destined for Vietnam. And thankfully, Richard Nixon did away with the draft in 1963 or 73. So what we see in this Dean Rusk guy is one of the most heinous warmongers of the 20th century. And it is evident now from what we know about the signature of anyone who is a member of the Pilgrim Society that he was taking his orders from the Pilgrim Society, and they were putting him in one position after another within the U.S. State Department, by the way, that led him to make sure that we had all these wars so that all his banker friends in the Pilgrim Society could make money by funding both sides of the war. That's what we've learned is their strategy. It's a war strategy. And with wars, they can drive currencies up and down and therefore continue to make money over and over again with the same amount of gold or silver or fiat currency. So that's in brief what we've discovered, that in our recent history, and in the memory of anybody that's probably over 50 in this audience, Dean Rusk was a chief demon of the Pilgrim Society running the United States. And the other thing that was quite telling, in an interview, this committee, the Rees Committee, had a chief investigator, and two videos have emerged where he is discussing the details of how they were given access to these various records of the foundations. And by the way, Rees said they were all extremely arrogant, as if to say, we don't even need to provide you with information because we are above reproach. That was their attitude. It was a very haughty attitude. But this analyst said he was given access to the Carnegie Foundation records from the 1900s. And I'll bottom line it. He said that these guys mostly feared that they would be caught out, that somebody would figure out their game eventually. And then secondly, they identified the Secretary of State position within the United States as their most prized position in order to control America and American politics. And here we have Dean Rusk, who was set up as a Rhodes Scholar, as a pilgrim, and then pushed into that. And the actual history of the Pilgrims actually has a picture of Rusk on one of its pages. So here we have another piece of the puzzle of how the Pilgrims rolled out of their formation in 1902. And by the time the end of World War I, Eisenhower into Truman, they had already seized control of the United States.
Yes, that is a good picture of Dean Rusk being the powerful man who controlled the Rockefeller Foundation for all those years.
Oh, I forgot to mention that.
And he, of course, then controlled the groups that the Rockefeller Foundation donated to. Now, I want to go back in history because, you know, we can't talk just about modern times without saying, well, you know, we have to go way back. But if you go back to the Vatican, and if you go back to tax-exempt groups like the Knights of Malta, all these charitable organizations, they're money-laundering groups. They fly under the false flag of charitable donations, philanthropy, but what are they really doing? They are tax evaders. And whether it be big corporations who, through all kinds of connivance with lawyers, or whether it be through a church or other tax-exempt groups, or whether it just be offshore tax havens, which are really avoidance of tax, they're all money laundering. And we have seen this again and again. And the biggest foundations, the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller, Carnegie, and then their stooges like Sarnoff, and later the Rothschilds' stooge, J.P. Morgan, and on and on and on, all the bankers. Who are those people? Those are people who don't pay any taxes. And then they supposedly give away a lot of money to charitable organizations. Wrong. Now, all those charitable organizations should be closed if they're 501c3s in America. Now, in England, they get away with this because they don't have laws that govern this. But we do. You cannot be a left-wing, progressive, insane, fascist, Democrat organization and still get a tax-exempt status, so that the money that George Soros gives you from the Open Society Institute or Tides Foundation or the Ford Foundation or the Carnegie Foundation or the Rockefeller Foundation, you can't be Antifa and take that money.
By the way,
you're political.
Reese, in his conclusions and the recommendations for how to fix the problem, did bring all that up. So they made a series of very useful recommendations on how to rein in these out of control foundations. But as far as I can tell, the recommendations of his committee were dropped like a hot potato by Congress.
That's because J.P. Morgan at one point loaned America money so it wouldn't go bankrupt. That's how wealthy he was. And when you look at Carnegie, and after Morgan bought Carnegie, that was it. Then the bankers completely took over. And what were called the robber barons, and they hated to be called that, because they were really tax thieves, right?
Right.
They simply just do not pay taxes. But it's okay because they donate to libraries and lovely things and arts and cultural. Well, they're really wonderful people. No, I worked for the philanthropy group here in our state, and I have written many, many, many grants. And let me tell you, you simply do what they tell you to do. Your grant better be exactly what they want, and then you better do exactly what they tell you to do, or you don't get the money. They'll even take it back after they give it to you. So you are controlled by the money that you're given. And we have shown the 184 groups that are supported by this false philanthropy is from money stolen from the United States, we the people. That is IRS should go after those people, close all offshore banking in this country, outside of this country, all British offshore banking. That's in almost every single Commonwealth nation has offshore banking because the British are so into this and they taught it to us, right? So what you have pointed out is that way back, they knew that they couldn't uncouple themselves from what were government / monopoly / corporations owned by individuals, but well, it wasn't individuals. It was the government giving them the money and the contracts, in many cases, no bid contracts. Still to this very day, it goes on with Halliburton, with KBR, with all these different groups that get Lockheed Martin. They just, does Boeing get it or does Lockheed Martin get it this year? There's no bidding. And who owns those companies? Who owns the military-industrial complex? The same people who pay no taxes and use false flag charitable philanthropy as their excuse for what they do.
Well, there's another element of this, and we mentioned, we started off this by identifying Rusk as a leader of the Rockefeller Foundation. He was the president between 52 and 60. Which was the post-war period when the whole military-industrial complex was getting organized. They had already stolen something like 50,000 patents from around the world to consolidate their communications power, their pharmacy power, and their media power. Now, let's talk about media, for example, because we now know from a lot of evidence that the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, were heavily invested in something called the Tavistock Institute. And just by way of a quick way of recalling, that was the British Psychological Institute's research arm that started at the end of World War I and has carried on. And it was started with Rockefeller, Carnegie, J.P. Morgan money. So we're not talking about, they haven't gone far afield, because by the time we have Dean Rusk taking over at the Rockefeller Foundation, they were giving millions and tens of millions of dollars to the Tavistock Institute for the specific task of controlling society and controlling social reactions to whatever the issues of the day were. So they were actually fulfilling the Empire Press Union's task of creating public opinion, and then by specifics of mind control and brainwashing. Now, we have to keep in mind that that was also at the time when RCA and NBC were rolling out television at that time. Color TV came shortly after that. And they were implementing many of these Tavistock Institute principles of brainwashing and mind control through David Sarnoff, another pilgrim, through RCA and NBC and all the related institutions.
And when you were doing your research, you stumbled on something, and we've put a request out to our listeners around the world about Dean Rusk.
We noticed that his Wikipedia page says that he has a KBE, KBE, three capital letters. And that means Companion, Knight Companion of the British Empire. And yet, when we went around and looked at most of his resumes, about half of them had that in, the other half didn't. And normally, those awards are published by the London Gazette, and we couldn't find them. So we have yet to find in anything other than a couple of the British newspapers that say that he was given a KBE in 1976 by Queen Elizabeth.
Well, for the people who may just drop in, just heard this video and haven't heard the long history that you've talked about the British infiltration, can you quickly explain why this would be problematic that our Secretary of State was a knight under the British Empire?
Yes. Well, there we have a little bit of a problem with things called treason and sedition. And what we can't have is members of our government that are actually have pledged fealty and loyalty to other countries. That is either tradition or sedition or treason, depending on the circumstance. So I guess one question is, when did he receive that? And most people think, oh, isn't that nice? He got a nice award and a nice badge, and he got patted on the head by the Queen. But what we're really seeing with the whole honor system in the British Empire is that is a way the Pilgrim Society keeps control of its minions across the board, around the world, through these awards. They have more awards than you can possibly imagine. And for Rusk, who was a Rhodes Scholar, schooled and groomed in Oxford, to receive a knighthood is very telling that the activities that he was engaged in were seditious. But we want to see some more hard evidence. We have the independent newspaper in England says he got the KBE in 1976. We want to see the actual records of the announcement.
After World War II, Dean Rusk hung out with Edwin Paulee, and Edwin Paulee basically controlled the redistribution of wealth.
That's right.
Of all nations after World War II. In the end, he became a Canadian citizen and a loyal subject of the British monarchy. Edwin Paulee was one of the teachers of Dean Rusk. But then Dean Rusk brought all that type of evil into the modern world that he had learned from Charles Dawes before him after World War I. So this is when there's a war, and you were just talking about, of course, the Tavistock Institute being funded by the Rockefellers, which before was the Wellington House, which before was controlled by the War Cabinet. And so this is war propaganda.
Yep.
Turned into corporate propaganda, supported by corporate monopolies that were made those monopolies by the government during war. Remember that it's important for me to remember that Rockefeller was made wealthy because he got the monopoly on oil in World War I, period. And then after that, his wealth was, it couldn't be counted. They had to have antitrust suit against him. So that Standard Oil broke up into seven oil companies, each of which was as big as Standard before it was broken up. That's how big it was. And they still control us up until the moment that the petrodollar controlled us recently. But I want to just say that there was a trick that was going on in Britain. And that's a group that started in 1895 called the London School of Economics. And it was founded by Fabian Society members who literally founded their group around 1900 formally. But before that, there were a bunch of socialist slash fascist slash communists. And they tried to bring and have brought in the Social Democratic Party, the Labour Party of the British Parliament. Now, the Fabian Society had an idea in mind, and that was the redistribution of wealth. Well, the Pilgrims said, who were the rich people, said to those Fabians who actually had some ideas of, you know, ideals of socialism, we're going to do something very nice. We're going to prove to you that all of us rich people, we give a ton of money, and that makes us okay. Yeah, we're robber barons, but we give away a ton of money. And so because we donate, and we donate to groups that you like. So we're going to donate to all your left-wing, progressive, insane socialist Democrat groups. But on the other hand, we are going to secretly control the world through economic hegemony. And that was then later what we now have as the London School of Economics and their theories, the Malthusian theories that they have. So what we're seeing is that the war taught them how to propagandize, not only for brainwashing, as you pointed, and for what I would call behavioral modification, but strictly for social engineering for the sake of killing the people the elite don't want. Therefore, wars were created by propaganda with the promise of the redistribution of wealth at all levels, always, you know, don't worry, the rich are going to have the money taken away from them. No, the rich own the banks that paid for both sides of the war. No matter who wins, they win. And not double, sometimes triple. So whatever money they put into war. So this is a continuation of the London School of Economics, the Fabian Society, the Pilgrim Society, the Cecil Rhodes Roundtable, the Milner Kindergartner, Cardin, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, who a lot of the people you're talking about were connected to the RIIA. And then that became the Council on Foreign Relations, which basically is a social engineering group for Fabian socialism right here in America.
Can we lump those two together? Because one of the things I've noticed is that one of the ways these guys fly under the radar screen is they've got so many names that you get lost in the soup. And from everything I can tell, the umbrella group is the Pilgrim Society. And underneath them is all these names that you just mentioned. And and by doing that and by identifying these kind of amorphous groups where you don't really have a leader, but you hear about all these people being involved, it's a moving target. And you can't really hold anybody accountable because it's a collective. It's a collective of elitists as opposed to a collective of the citizens. And you're right, they very intentionally decided that socialism was going to be their means for controlling the masses while the elites pushed their corporatism through the hiding behind the monarchy for legal protection as well as political protection. And that was a better system for their intents than America had with this republic, this pesky republic that the pilgrims wish King George had never allowed. But we fortunately have enough of the original founders' checks and balances that we haven't been totally taken over yet. That's in my view. But these guys are getting more and more effective at figuring out ways around that. And by identifying the fact that in our history, in our modern history, a guy like Dean Rusk, who was killing people by the millions worldwide, and he knew what he was doing, and he was enriching all of the military providers in Vietnam for how many years? It was a godsend, and here we have even Lyndon Johnson's wife. What was her name?
Lady Bird.
Lady Bird. She owned that radio station in Saigon that the movie was made about.
I forgot that. That's funnier than heck.
The Robin Williams movie. Hello, Vietnam. Right. And here we have these people just raping and pillaging the American people and the citizens of the world with this agenda. It's time to stop the money flow. That's how these guys make this work.
What? How do the Rothschilds play into the Pilgrim Society?
They're one of the founders. That's easy.
1902. Well, you know what? Not everybody is up to speed with what's going on. And, you know, so many people are concerned about naming the Rothschilds and for the various and you know, reasons that we know. But it is okay to name them because you've done so. You've proven this academically. You've provided evidence. And that's who is right there in the middle of the elitists.
Yeah, we have discussed this before, but in 1880 was a watershed year because that was the year that J.P. Morgan, I'm going to use my terms and my conclusions, knocked off his dad, J.S. Morgan, and Lord Rosebery knocked off his wife, who was a Rothschild. I don't believe in coincidences with these people. And that event, those two events alone completely turned the tide of banking in the world to this day. Because J.P. Morgan took power and Lord Rosebery, who became Prime Minister of England 4 years later, basically took over the N.M. Rothschild business, the banking business. And then you've got another Rothschild, Henry de Worms, who was very prominent in Parliament and was running cover for these individuals, as well as cooperating with them. They were working out their plan, and this was all Rothschild money through the various institutions of the British Empire that moved this agenda forward. Without that kind of money, I don't think they would have been able to achieve this. And then the other magical thing is we discover that three Rothschilds, Rosebery, de Worms, and Lord Rothschild, that would have been N.M. Rothschild, were instrumental in having the crown create the Knights of Malta, English priory. And so therefore they got under the covers of the Vatican Bank through Malta, and to this day award chivalrous honors to people all over the planet, including our current Chief Justice John Roberts. So these people didn't miss a beat in figuring out how they were going to grab control of human society.
Now, I notice in Betsy and her team's post on the Cat Report, and by the way, if you haven't seen the Cat Report today or Truth Bits, you better hang on to your hat because it is a bit earth-shattering in terms of some of the facts that have been brought out there. But something that you brought out in what she posted from some of the research from the miners and from the Americans for Innovation is that a reference to the Committee of 300. Mm. Now, the Committee of 300, I've always considered that, you know, just to be a conspiracy theory. But now I'm pretty convinced, and I'm going to make a guess. I'm going to guess that the Committee of 300 are people in every case who are members of the Pilgrim Society, and in almost every other, also coincidentally, members of the Privy Council.
I think you're right. I think that the membership in the Privy Council is the common thread among all these people that we see are driving this agenda worldwide. And you're right, it's not that many people. And so that reference to, in that book, to the Committee of 300 is something that they say is common knowledge in American intelligence circles, which would mean initiated. Those initiated into the secrets of the Pilgrims know that that Committee of 300 are Pilgrims and they run the world. And they do it irrespective of sovereign entities. And they're trying to perfect the takeover of the U.S. That's why I'm so thankful that Donald Trump got elected.
So you have revealed Burroughs Wellcome Trust, the largest trust, maybe, or second largest in the world.
Largest,
and its connection to the pharmaceutical vaccine wars, as I call them. They're the overlords of the pharmaceutical takeover of the world, the pharmaceutical one global world order, as I would call it. And then who's in there also? Oh, flying under the false flag of philanthropy would be Bill and Linda Gates. Melinda Gates. There would be Bill and Hillary Clinton. There would be the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, all kinds of other, any group, good group that you think is really doing great work and they have a wonderful name. So, you know, if it's got the word democracy in it or free press or anything like that, look closely. That's one of George Soros's 184 non-government organizations, which are 501c3s in this country, who received 2 years ago donations of $86 billion in 1 year, I believe it was, $84 or $86 billion, because he thought they were coming after his offshore accounts. So he took all of his stolen money, tax-exempt money, dumped it into these, because he said that if Trump continues after, remember, he put a $1 billion bet that Trump wouldn't win. You know, he betted that it would that Trump would lose, basically, and so he shorted the market. He lost $1 billion on that day. Well, it's to his interest to not have Trump destroy globalism, and so he took all of his money, all of his excess cash that was stolen from us and from the stock market and his hedge fund, which is held in Caracas. He pays no taxes. And his son, Alexander, both should go to jail. Of course, they're also wanted for international crimes against humanity in a number of countries, or George Soros's, not his son. But those are the examples of the kind of people that we see funding the NGO. Now, the big news of the day recently was Elizabeth Warren's, I always get this right, maybe Betsy can correct me. What's it called? The Bureau for Financial, you know, the thing that Elizabeth Warren, I'm butchering it. What? How do you say it?
Protection Bureau.
Say it again.
Consumer Protection Bureau.
Bureau.
Yes.
Did I get that wrong?
No, it's close. It's like the Consumer Protection Bureau, but what it is, it's a left-wing organization that is non-constitutional, that even the president can't appoint the person. She wanted to have absolute 100% control of what? And this is what the big scam was for 8 years of Obamaism. They would get any federal fines, and this group, the Consumer Bureau, whatever it's called. It's a Consumer Protection Bureau, right? So they'd go after any
company. That's under the Department of Commerce.
Well, it's separate. This is a separate organization. And she created it. And the Supreme Court has now said that it's illegal and you can't do it. But basically, it said she had the right to go after any company she wanted, create any fines she wanted, take that money and give it to any NGO she wanted. Mm. That's what Obama did with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. He created an organization to handle all kinds of tens of billions of dollars that would then be shuffled into the same exact NGOs that George Soros donates to, the exact same groups.
To clarify, I looked it up. It's called the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Thank you so much. I always get that wrong because it's anti-constitutional. It makes me want to vomit, and it shows who Elizabeth Warren is.
She created it? How'd she create it? As a government entity? She created it from Congress? How did she create it?
Well, I don't know if she was in Congress when the legislation was created, but she was placed as the head of it. I think that
It was legislation.
Yeah, it was legislation. But it was Obama legislation that basically said, we're going to take from the rich and give to the supposed poor NGOs. Same exact logic of the fake false flag philanthropy. And that's what this is again. And it's disgusting me because it takes from the people who work hard to pay taxes and it redistributes it not to the poor, Not at all. These aren't poor groups. These are the richest groups around. Black Lives Matter has more money than they can spend. OFA, Obama's 32,000 people on the street using Saul Alinsky's plan being controlled by Eric Holder and by Valerie Jarrett. They've already used, they had, I forget how many offices they had to train people to do protests and literally Antifa and Black Lives Matter style violent protests. What is that? That was money left over, donated to him by George Soros, that he gave to another group called OFA, but they just changed Organizing for Action, which was at first his own organization. That's how corrupt it is. They simply take money that was donated to one group, create another group that's another NGO, 501c3, shuffle the money in there, add the Michelle Obama Foundation, add the Obama Library Foundation, and now it's so confused, nobody knows what they're doing, and then they stole land in Chicago. This is the same old story, because Americans are trying to copy the Brits, but the Brits don't have laws that stop this. You can't stop the monarchy. We can stop it in America.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head that if any of us on Main Street tried to run an organization like this, we'd be locked up. But when they run it, they get to run however they want, because they've either got the regulators in their pocket or they've got the judges in their pocket if it goes to a court. In this country, in England, it's even easier than that. They just go through the Queen's Court. So we've copied all of those mechanisms that these so-called elitists have used to protect themselves from accountability.
Absolutely.
And at least we can talk about accountability. They don't even talk about accountability in the UK.
Let's talk about it here in America. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gave to the CDC $200 million to help find a vaccine for COVID-19. Oh, that's right. They own the majority shares in Moderna, the company that already has the vaccine contract, before they even had a vaccine, which means they were paid $1.5 billion by the funds that were released. $8 billion were released the second that a medical emergency was declared. So Bill and Melinda donate $200 million, actually total it $400 million, because some of it went to the NIH, which then went for more Fauci P4 bioweapon experimentation, by the way. But the point is, they give money away for tax-free, right? And they don't pay taxes, right, Bill? You know, none of the big companies pay any taxes. They don't even claim they're American companies in most cases. But they give money away to the CDC that then gives them the rights. The CDC makes off of their 56 vaccines $4.1 billion a year for simply licensing them each year. So that means that Bill and Melinda Gates probably multiplied their money times, 100? And they get it back instantaneously, but they look like they are doing great work for the world. That's what we're talking about.
Ponzi scheme. I need to mention one more thing about that Reese report, because in the report, they summarize in the end, how these foundations are interlocking. That's a word they used. And they actually showed a table of all of the interlocking foundations and how they were the trustees of the Rand Corporation, which anybody who studies has studied the history of war since the 50s knows that the Rand Corporation has been one of the chief warmongering proponents of war. And here we have the Rand Corporation run by these foundations, including Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie. And inside that, one of the representative for the Ford Foundation at the Rand Corporation actually left the Rand Corporation and started MITRE Corporation. And MITRE Corporation is a well-known military contractor. And I will point out that the recently indicted Harvard nanoscience professor, Charles M. Lieber, was funded by the MITRE Corporation on one of his key technologies, which was nanowires, which they've discovered can be injected into people's bloodstreams, and these nanowires will actually attach themselves to cells without destroying the cell and allow these wires to monitor what's going on inside your cells. And this was funded by the MITRE Corporation, which the Rees Committee specifically identified one of their founders for. So here we have a connection now with the Rees Committee and Charles M. Lieber and this biowarfare attack on our bloodstreams through 5G.
Amazing. Absolutely. Underscoring the inhumane technologies that have come out of Britain from the Purbright Institute, from Burroughs Wellcome, from now AstraZeneca, that already has the contract to make 800 million vaccines of a vaccine. They're already making them that has not been tested. I say test all vaccines on members of the CDC, the NIH, and particularly the World Health Organization. Let's see if it works on them first.
And by the way, you mentioned AstraZeneca. AstraZeneca was formed by the largest armament dealer in the world, which was the Mon Corporation, ICI, in England, was created by explosives manufacturers.
Precisely. This is depopulation at its best in its British form of imperialistic eugenic control of the world. And it dips down into pharmaceuticals and vaccines because ultimately they kill people. That's what we have proven again and again. If they don't kill you, then 30, 40 years later, you get all kinds of illnesses that come out of those type of viruses given in vaccines. So what we've shown again is that the connection between the wealthy, between philanthropy and charitable organizations, and between depopulation methodologies, whether it be technology, pharmaceuticals, whether it be through food, through all types of eugenics, sterilization, so on and so forth. It's all the same story. It's all the same people. And they use the cloud of socialism and they use the fake charitable donations to make them look as if they are good people. Thank you, Mike, and your researchers, for bringing up the truth, shining up those gold nuggets and showing us that they aren't helping anybody. They are nothing more than after their own self-aggrandizement. And the proof is in the pudding through what it is that you brought us today. So thank you so much for all your incredible hard work.